Okay, let's pick up where we left off. I guess Dick Smith?
And then if you don't mind, I'm just going to repeat what I said earlier, that the next, after Dick, the next five people who have indicated a wish to testify, Vera Trafton, Adrian Rollo, Dane Trafton, and I'm going to keep going, actually. Harriet Powers, Kay Michka, and Wendy Glenn. And I'll repeat that later on. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Dick Smith, a resident of Eustis and member of and trail master of the Flagstaff ATV Club. While I do not profess to express the view of our 300 members, we were all very pleased to work with TransCanada on the Kibbe project. They were very cooperative and did what they said they would do, signs and not interfering with our passage on our trails and roads. They also left the trails better than they were. They kept us informed of where they would be working and if there were any problems. There never was any. They were very pleasant to work with and we're very happy with them. I support the expansion of the Kibbe project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vera, you're next.
Good evening. My name is Vera Trafton. I live in Phillips, and I'm speaking for myself. In 1999, we retired to this area because it promised to afford us the peaceful, unhurried life which visitors from industrialized places seek out when they come to spend their holidays. But what we found in 1999 is in danger of being altered forever. Industrial wind power is spreading like a plague of locusts at an alarming rate. This plague doesn't nibble here and there and make inconspicuous changes. It sets itself onto the highest ridges and destroys the delicate ecological balance established over millennia. Overly confident technicians with their toolbox approach to problems tackle the task of gouging out big roads onto steep slopes and cutting wide swaths through forests as if they were playing in a sandbox. Visual analysts defy common sense when they want us to believe that if we only see the monstrous machines from viewpoints here and there, our wilderness experience really shouldn't be affected. But jobs are being held out as bait and money is flowing freely, so the temptation is great to push concerns about the overall effect of industrial wind power on the area into the background. If you examine the facts, you will find that most of the jobs promised are short-term and profit only a few. Once the turbines dominate the landscape, there won't be any more retirees looking here for a place to settle. Will carpenters find clients who need their houses renovated or new camps built? Will guides find fewer sports coming to the area? Hotels, B&Bs, and fishing camps may well find that people who love this area are not returning. Wind developers make grand promises, but what happens when a plant changes hands? What will happen if wind power is supplanted by another renewable which doesn't depend on the fickle wind, and there are no more generous subsidies which make generous gifts to communities possible? A bankrupt business can't be expected to live up to its financial obligations. There are places in Maine which are being protected, and that's where the economies will continue to bring steady work and people will retain this good way of life. We've been singled out as an area to be exploited. I've studied wind power since 2002, when another huge industrial wind plant threatened us. Our search for information was much more laborious then than it is now, because good sources like www.windwatch.org have emerged, which give you the real facts about industrial wind power. You learn it provides a puny amount of intermittent power compared to serious sources, takes up huge areas per unit of power produced, and does nothing or nearly nothing to deal with emissions. You can read about Europe in these sites, which has longer experience with wind power than the U.S. Subsidies are handed out there, too, so wind power spreads. But there are many groups opposing it, and coal-fired plants or other reliable sources are needed as constant backup for wind. Even Denmark hasn't lowered its emissions. But I don't want to repeat all the false claims wind power makes. You've heard them, and the newspapers echo them ad nauseum. There is shamefully little real investigative journalism looking into this industry, and especially into whether big wind plants are appropriate for an area like this one. People are urged to make huge decisions based on the sort of flimsy information which they would never trust if they were buying a car or a stove. It's a horrible fad, this rush to cover our mountains with turbines. I was going to treat you to a partial translation of The Emperor's New Clothes. Do you remember that? It's a Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale. And the point of the story, which I think I didn't get when I was small, but which I got since reading it again, is that a couple of swindlers come to the land that the emperor rules, and they say they're weavers, and that the cloth that they weave is a very special one, which can be seen by those who are fit for their office and can't be seen by those who are unfit or who are stupid. So the emperor says, I've got to have this kind of cloth because then I'll know who's good and who's not. And the weavers set to work, and their empty looms are, they say, producing this fabulous cloth. And the emperor realizes that he's not seeing it. And then finally, after a bunch of ministers also don't see it but don't dare say that they don't see it, and this is all about the virtues, perhaps, of wind power or not being realized or not, the emperor parades before the town, and it's a little child who has common sense who says he's not wearing anything. So that story has popped up many times in the years that I've thought about the claims of wind power. I ask you, please, don't allow Sisk Mountain to be developed. Please don't be fooled by the developers' claims or accept the compromise proposed by the environmental organizations, which are pushing wind power rather than living up to their mission to protect this wild mountain habitat and the creatures and flora which flourish there. I want to find very quickly. What the Brookings Institute says about Maine. Maine's quality of place is our majestic mountains, unbroken forests, wild rivers, pristine lakes. As the search for quality places grows in importance, Maine possesses a globally known brand, the image of livable communities, stunning scenery, and great recreational opportunities. Please help us protect those opportunities. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Adrian, you're next. Apologize if I'm not pronouncing your name correctly.
My name is Adrian Rollo, and I'm a resident of New Vineyard, and I own a camp in Phillips. I've been visiting the Rangeley Lakes region of Maine since I was a child. It's that lifelong love of the mountains that has brought me here tonight. I grew up in Massachusetts, moved to nearby Rhode Island, and made my living there for the next 30 years as a staff accountant. My family and I witnessed uncontrolled development year after year from developers who made promises to residents that their projects would have little impact on their day-to-day lives. And what we got was a quality of life that was so congested and so stressful, the only saving grace left was that we could periodically escape to Maine to enjoy its beauty. Not New Hampshire or Vermont, although beautiful, there was just something about Maine that the rest of New England could not match. And please remember that, because people in southern New England know Maine is different. It's special. Rhode Island is only symbolic of all heavily populated areas, whether it be Massachusetts, New York, or Connecticut, where day-to-day life is pressure-packed. And I mean pressure-packed. I can't tell you how many times I would get in my car and just, it would take me a half an hour to go 1 mile. And that was a common thing. So for the last 40 years, my family traveled to Maine at least 5 or 6 times a year to swim in her crystal clear lakes, hike her mountains, and drink in her majestic scenery. And finally, we realized our dream and moved to Maine in 2000 to live a rural, peaceful life in the mountains. The incredible beauty of the Chenopans region stands shoulder to shoulder with the most scenic places on earth. It beckons to us. It heals our souls, our spirits. Sisk Mountain is one of the last wild places, so remote and beautiful. What are we thinking as we destroy these last wild places? Of all the places wind farms can be built, why would any developer choose the choicest land, destroy the most stunning beauty of these mountains, and leave the landscape scarred for eternity? There are so few quiet places left in New England. Please don't sacrifice what little is left. And if anybody in the room has traveled across the country, especially in the Midwest, coming down through Nebraska, western Kansas, Oklahoma, right down into the Amarillo Basin, where they put up these wind farms that are, we're not talking 40 or 50 turbines, we're talking a couple of thousand of them. They are just endless, endless miles of those things, and that's where they belong. You can drive 100 miles and not see anything in any direction. So I'd like to close, as I always do, with a very famous quote by Maine's distinguished Senator George J. Mitchell, who once wrote, and please listen, because this is so profound. We have an obligation to leave for future generations the very basics of human life on Earth: clean air, pure water, unpoisoned land. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dane, you're next.
Chairman Hilton, commissioners, my name is Dane Trafton. I'm from Phillips, and I'm here to urge you to turn down this application for the Sisk wind project, or as it's called, the Kibby expansion. But my theme tonight, which will be brief, is not just negative. In fact, it's positive, because once you've instead of approving this project, I want you to do something else. I recommend that you require TransCanada to conduct at their own expense a year-long study of the operation of the already existing turbines on Kibby. And I intend that this should be a public study. The results, which I'm going to describe in a minute, the results should be available to the public for its education, and I believe the study will redound to your education, too. One of the things that has characterized the various debates in front of LIRC up to this time is a sort of series of conflicting claims, and there's never time to really find out which claims are correct. But the study I'm recommending should document the following matters, which will be useful for all of us afterwards. First, the amount of electricity actually produced by the existing turbines and its effect on the grid, by which I mean such things as how many fossil fuel generators were actually forced to cut back as the result of the operation of the existing turbines. how much CO2 and other emissions were actually avoided. And these things can be charted by studying the operation of the grid. This is not an impossible request. It would be expensive. How many emissions... how much fossil fuel backup generation was needed to supplement the irregularities of the wind power? And how many emissions were created by this backup? I want the study to document how the wind power actually generated affected the price of electricity in Maine, something that can be done. How many full-time post-construction jobs were created? That is, post-construction, after the construction was completed, how many jobs remained in connection with the wind plant? This study would answer many, many important questions, the kinds of questions that have been the subject of mere he said, she said sorts of exchanges in front of this commission. It would clear a lot of things up. It's essential that the study be made public. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Harriet, you're next. Thank you for coming. Kay, you're next. And after Kay, Wendy.
My name is Kay Michka. I've been employed in the travel industry for 22 years. I have the unique opportunity to be a positive ambassador for our great state of Maine every time I go to work. I fly thousands of miles a year. I have the opportunity to speak with over 15,000 people from all over the world in a year's time. I have a keen grasp of what people want to experience when they spend their hard-earned dollars on travel. I'm very familiar with the spark of excitement in people's eyes when they hear the word Maine. Whether from India or Tokyo or Wyoming, their eyes gloss over from a romanticized idea of lobsters, pine trees, rocky shorelines, whisper-soft canoe strokes on reflection glass ponds, and miles of snow-covered mountains. They eagerly ask me questions about the lifestyle here. Why did I move here? The weather, the people, the most memorable places to see, the best places to eat, the most unique places to stay, the activities they hope to experience, which they can treasure as memories for the rest of their lives. I am happy to encourage their excitement and tourism dollars. The people of our Western Mountain region could most definitely benefit long-term from the business and the influx of money. For the most part, people are depending on Maine to give them that fairy book adventure for which they have saved so long and worked so hard. They want to step into the pages of Arundel by Kenneth Roberts. It is not uncommon for someone to be reading that notable literary work as the plane is descending into Boston on their first stop to visit our magnificent land of canoes, Abenakis, big game animals, breathtaking vistas, such as the historic chain of ponds of Fords. Benedict Arnold's march is alive and well in the pages of history and the hearts of the young and old. People want to be enchanted by Maine. In my travels, I also have the opportunity to discuss current affairs. As the topic is very near and dear to my heart, I often have the occasion to discuss the rising force of wind turbine projects all over this country and other countries as well. People are astonished, some speechless, when I tell them of the 40-story turbines that are being proposed or built on Maine's mountaintops. They have heard the term wind turbines, but most envision small little windmills, no more imposing than those dotted the prairie landscapes in a much simpler time. I have made it a point to ask them if they would pay money to travel to Maine's mountains to see the wind turbines I describe, and I have yet to find someone who says they would spend money in our region in order to see them. They even admit they will spend their time and money elsewhere in Maine and New England, somewhere that fits their image of the grandeur they wish to experience. somewhere not marred by big machines looming down over them in a most unnatural way from an otherwise majestically natural mountainside. I'm opposed to the granting of development permit 4860 to TransCanada Maine Wind Development Incorporated because it will destroy the scenic views included in the chain of ponds, thus destroying far more revenues for the Mainers in our region than the project will garner for those who live in this treasured land of Arundel. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Wendy, you're next. And Wendy's the last name on these lists that have indicated that they wish to testify, so I guess if anybody also wishes to testify who wrote their name on this list, please let me know and I will announce your name. Otherwise, you may be the last one. I don't know.
My name is Wendy Glenn. I'm a resident of Carrabassett Valley, and I'm a property owner at Chain of Ponds Township. One of the reasons I've brought these pictures with me here that TransCanada's had in the back is to, one, show you that that's my camp right there, and these are the windmills behind it. And the second reason is to show you the map here with the little black spots on it that are the buildings and the residences of the community of Chain of Ponds and the Camp Owners Association. I hear people talk about Eustis being the host community, but we are in fact in Chain of Ponds and we are in fact the host community for this development. And our buildings, and despite the fact that there are only a few year-round residences here, we are still the host community, and we are due tangible environmental and economic benefits from this project. So I'm going to leave these up here for you to look at. So by speaking last, there are a lot of points that I was going to make that have been made, so I'm going to kind of go through this and paraphrase some things, but hit the high points. As I said, we are the host community, and I'm afraid there's been a lot of, misconstruing. Eustis and Stratton, who've been given lots of gifts, and other areas in the community, or at large, we'll say, or the state, that have been funded in order to provide tangible economic impact for this project. One thing I found interesting yesterday was that Sharon at the Natanas Pond Campground was offered solar power, which I haven't heard of anybody else in our community being offered anything that's really a tangible benefit. I've been told all along that it needs to be a benefit for the greater community, the greater public, and not a personal benefit. And so I did a little math on the solar. She spoke about the necessity for refrigeration and the sale of ice. I do realize that ice is a very hot commodity, pun intended, in the area. And if they were to make a dollar a bag on ice after doing a little research today, they have 60 sites, 150 days open, that's $9,000 a year in their pocket by putting solar power in. And I think that's a direct benefit to an individual as opposed to the community. So I don't know where that qualifies as a community benefit, other than maybe I would get some ice there. Looking at March 16th, the Land Use Regulation Commission wrote to the governor about accepting the new CULP, and there are a few things in here that I found interesting. One is LURC's rule regarding the economic activity in the jurisdiction and to support economic development in appropriate locations. There are a number of people that have spoken that don't think Sisk Mountain is an appropriate location for economic development. I don't believe that it is either, for the reasons that have all been said: wildlife, noise, pollution, light pollution, rampant development of our mountaintops. In this letter, The governor also says you, meaning LURC, have assured me that you will actively explore a collaborative process as they may offer a path forward which not only maintains but improves landowners' value while enhancing the protection of public interests. These assurances are integral to my approval of this revised plan. He says, improves landowners' value while enhancing the protection of public interest. As you know, I'm a real estate agent. I have been for 23 years. You've asked me to prove to you that windmills will decrease the value of property. I think you've heard testimony here about people wanting to come to Maine, about the wilderness experience that they would like to have, about all the reasons people don't want the windmills, and some people do, and those are mostly economic and not in the area. In any case, this does not improve the landowner's value of anybody in this host community. And as far as enhancing the protection of public interests, these are great ponds, and they're surrounded by Maine public reserve land. It's in our public interest to maintain them in the natural character that you're charged with doing, to maintain these ponds in the natural character. So I found that real interesting. Yesterday, Jane Wilkinson said, well, this is a good spot for economic development because of the low population density. Well, the reason there is low population density here is because you have restricted the development of these ponds to one camp per mile of shore frontage, because in four out of the seven categories, they are outstanding as far as your wild lakes assessments, and the other three categories, they're significant. Therefore, you deem them a valuable statewide resource, and you restricted development. So I would hate to see that used against us, that you restrict the development and then say it's okay to develop it because there's no one there. Let me just see which other points I wanted to make. As far as preserving the area, according to your guidelines, LURC must ensure that the proposal will not adversely affect natural and cultural resources, resource values identified as significant or outstanding on the wildlands lakes assessment, which I just went over. The adequate provision has been made. You must make sure that the adequate provision has been made for fitting the proposal harmoniously into the existing natural environment in order to assure that there will be no undue adverse effect on existing uses, scenic character, and natural and historic resources in the area likely to be affected by the proposal. In a letter dated May 6th, our Deputy State Historic Preservation Office states, as noted in my letter of February 2, 2010, the chain of ponds area of the Arnold Trail is nearly pristine and unspoiled. That's a quote. Only the presence of Route 27 and a few seasonal lakeshore camps along a portion of the lake shoreline provides a visitor with a reminder that he or she is not in the late 19th century. We acknowledge that the presence of these features in the landscape has diminished the integrity of the setting, although not to the extent that the Arnold Trail has lost the ability to convey its historic significance. However, when we apply the criteria of adverse effect as set forth in 36 CFR Part 800.5A1, we conclude that the location, number, operational characteristics, and scale of the proposed wind turbines will substantially change the wilderness character of the Arnold Trail's physical features within the property setting that contribute to its historic significance, and will introduce visual elements that diminish the integrity of the property's significant historic features. Based on the design and location of the Kibby Expansion Power Project, the setting of the Arnold Trail to Quebec, and the criteria of adverse effect, the Commission reaffirms its prior conclusion that proposed undertaking will have an adverse effect upon this historic property. You must ensure that the proposal will not have an undue adverse impact on traditional uses, including, without limitation, non-intensive public recreation, sporting camp operations, timber harvesting, and agriculture. The buildings that were mentioned by the State Historic Preservation Officer were mostly built at the turn of the last century. The Manganic Fish and Game Corporation, a set of camps on Chain of Ponds, existed precisely for these non-intensive recreational activities. Today, traditional uses include fishing, hiking, canoeing, kayaking, ice fishing, and restorative relaxation. These activities have been enjoyed for centuries in the pristine mountains and lakes that are the focus of Chain and Ponds. Any development of Sisk Mountain or the surrounding mountaintops would have an undue adverse impact on this pristine area. A number of people have spoken about what good stewards TransCanada are, and while they might be good people, they met with our Camp Owners Association and told us originally that we should do this for the greater good. And upon further research of TransCanada and their practices, they don't always believe in the greater good, I'm afraid. If you research the Keystone Tar Sands operation, you'll find that they have stated that some communities are expendable and they should be able to use inferior pipelines. The tar sands themselves emit much higher carbon levels than other sources of oil and are not green at all. In any case, the gist of it is, if it's researched, is that TransCanada is about profit and not about the environment, and that's what we're seeing here today, is that they're after subsidies, and it's not about green power. And in that vein, people have touched on whether or not these windmills are actually producing power, green power or otherwise. I've spoken to a number of employees, as I've stated before, about the icing situations on the mountain. I know they were having to redesign windmills because of the harsh weather up there. And I'm not so sure it's a viable option. And I think that's the jury's still out on that, whether or not those windmills should really be there and whether or not they really are producing power, especially in light of the documentation that's been received that Richard Fecteau talked about the green power being available out of Canada. It's a proven, tried-true method. They have lots of it to export. It will not cost us subsidies, and market supply and demand may dictate that this wind power, with its subsidies that are needed and the development costs, is not an effective use of our money, especially in these economic times. So again, I reiterate what Dane said about proving that they're actually producing power, proving that they're going to provide some tangible benefit to our host community other than giving money to a variety of organizations in the greater area. And lastly, I wanted to read from our Natural Resource Protection Act. It states, "The legislature finds and declares that the state's rivers and streams, great ponds, fragile mountain areas, freshwater wetlands, significant wildlife habitat, coastal wetlands, and coastal sand dunes systems are resource of state significance. These resources have great scenic beauty and unique characteristics, unsurpassed recreational, cultural, historical, and environmental value of present and future benefit to the citizens of the state, and that uses are causing the rapid degradation and, in some cases, the destruction of these critical resources, producing significant adverse economic and environmental impacts and threatening the health, safety, and general welfare of the citizens of the state. It concludes that the legislature further finds and declares that the cumulative effect of the frequent minor alterations and occasional major alterations of these resources poses a substantial threat to the environment and economy of the state and its quality of life. As we look at all of these windmills, these proposals for windmills across our state, I have not been here all day, but I haven't heard much discussion on the cumulative effect. And that's what this addresses, is the cumulative effect of all these changes of the development of our mountaintops. So I ask you today, please don't allow any more of our mountaintops in Maine to be decimated, and certainly not before we know that it's for a good reason, that they are indeed producing any power at all. So thank you for your time and consideration, And thank you for being here on such a long day.
Thank you.
That completes my list.
I have a closing statement here. The second and final session to hear testimony from the public is now concluded. I wish to remind everyone that the record of this hearing will remain open until Monday, May 24th, to receive written statements from the public, and for an additional 7 days until Tuesday, June 1st, to receive written statements filed in rebuttal to those filed during the previous 10 days. No additional evidence or testimony will be allowed into the record after the closing of the record. And I now declare this hearing closed.